I love that. And so you launched Girls Embracing Mother and later the Buried Alive Project. Can you tell me a little bit about each of those and what the purpose is for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually launched Girls Embracing Mothers. We go by GM while I was in law school. I went to SMU, Dedman School of Law, Pony Up. And that organization, we were to empower women and girls who've been impacted by maternal incarceration, with the core focus on girls whose mothers are currently incarcerated. My mother was in prison, Elizabeth, while I was at Price Waterhouse, and many people had no idea. And that experience of having an incarcerated mother, it brought me very proximate to this issue of mass incarceration and truly understanding the devastation that mass incarceration causes on families and entire communities. And on any given day in this country, there are over 2 million children with an incarcerated parent. It's devastating to have any loved one in prison. But it is a primal wound when it's your mama. And that's something that stuck so deeply with me, even as a young adult. Understanding the pain and trauma my sister and I had to endure through that situation. And that experience brought me to launching Girls Embracing Mothers. And for the past 8 years now, Girls Embracing Mothers has partnered with the Texas Department of Criminal Justice and Texas Women's Prisons. For 8 years, the first Saturday of every single month, we take girls to visit their moms in prison. We have workshops throughout the year that focus on empowerment. We have an annual summer camp. We recently launched our economic empowerment program for formerly incarcerated women to put them into the workforce. Unfortunately, because of COVID, we have not been in the prison in almost 2 years. That's been tough. But we've pivoted. You know, we do what we do. We switched to virtual programming, correspondence programming. We're keeping those mamas and daughters connected. We are still helping to break that cycle and build a bond. And so that organization, you know, has been my baby for a very long time. We are led by Justice Impacted Women. And, you know, through that, I also, as I mentioned, was working corporate law and working pro bono on these cases of people who were serving a lot of time in federal prison. And I came across a case in law school of a woman named Sharonda Jones. And Sharonda is just a dear friend of mine now. But at the time, she was serving a life without parole sentence, a fundamental death sentence for a federal drug offense. Her very first conviction, felony or otherwise. And it was just something about Sharonda that just tugged at my soul. I don't know if it was because my mom had been to prison, if it was because she was also a Black daughter of the rural South like me. I'm from rural East Texas. She's from rural East Texas. But I sent her a card. I told her I was a law student and I was going to help her get out of prison. And I told her I knew next to nothing about criminal law. So her response to me was kind of, good luck with law school. Like, yeah, right. How are you going to get me out of here? But we did. We went on a 6-year journey. And Sharonda Jones, after serving 16 years and 9 months of her life, was freed through clemency from President Obama. And through that, we just linked arms, Sharonda and I and a client, Corby Jacobs, who had life and got clemency. And we started the Buried Alive Project. And that nonprofit is to where we work to fight to free people serving unjust sentences handed down under these federal drug laws. We are unlocking people and potential one by one. We're picking those locks in human cages. And through that, we've been able to free, I think we're at 54 men and women who were serving life without parole sentences in federal prison for drugs. The Buried Alive Project was incubated at the Deason Criminal Justice Reform Center at SMU. I was their first practitioner in residence and really took that time and that space at the center to incubate this work and work on strategic vision for it. And so through those two nonprofits, it's definitely been an interesting journey, to say the least.
I love that. And first of all, congratulations. 54 is an astounding number. And it's so many people impacted by your work that I want everybody to take a moment to realize 54 people's lives have been indelibly changed by Ms. Barnett. We talked a lot about what it means to have direct service components of nonprofit work, and how 54 lives may not sound like a lot to funders who are looking for systemic impact, but the need for the direct service and systemic impact partners to go hand in hand. I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about what it means to you for funders and partners in this work to really keep a hold of the direct service work.
Yeah, no, that's a really great question, Elizabeth. You know, it's something you and I have talked about a lot, something I've just pondered and contemplated a lot. The work we do at the Buried Alive Project, for example, it is direct service work because we're directly serving our clients. And from a funding perspective, a lot of funders, as you know, they want to fund policy work, systemic change, which we need. There's no doubt about it. But I also feel, especially through the work we've done with the Buried Alive Project, and we launched in 2018, you know, we're doing a lot with the little. You know, we barely have any funding, even though people have told me, oh, I would think you had millions of dollars. And I'm like, why would you think that? And they said, just because of the work, the outcomes, you know, but we're just working and doing what we have to do with the little. And what I'm learning as I work through how challenging it is to fundraise for direct service work is also being in conversation with funders about this, of knowing that freedom is multidimensional. And yes, we need laws to change. Yes, we need policies to change. There's no doubt about that.